We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Jeff Sullivan can be found on Twitter at @based_ball. The senior editor at Fangraphs can be found right now, as he can Tuesdays at 10 on the Bernstein and McKnight show on The Score. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
We're all right. And looking at a Cubs team that this year has made use of the Iowa Cubs, and that shuttle has been going back and forth for the pitching staff for a position player here or there. So I'm wondering, what do we know about really good teams and the limitations of the use of their replacement level players? How many call-ups throughout a season is too many by history for really good teams?
I do think it's interesting. We're getting into a point where teams are concerned more about fatigue. Obviously, when someone gets injured, then that player needs to be replaced. But teams are also more conscious of not wearing down relievers. Players aren't playing 162 games anymore unless their name is Alcides Escobar for some reason. So I think that teams are already looking for reasons to use that AAA shuttle more often, whether it's with the bullpen or the bench. But I will say, this isn't a perfect proxy, but just looking at the list right now, the Cubs are actually, in terms of players used this season, that works pretty well, right, as a measure of how often you're moving pieces around. The Cubs have actually used the fifth fewest players of any team in baseball this year. Now the Astros are number one. They've been very healthy and very good. Astros have only used 33 players all season long, but the Cubs have only used 38, and the median here is 42. The Angels lead the way with 50 because every single player on that team has been injured. So the Cubs have actually kind of kept it together this season. And if you want to look at a recent example of a team that was using players, different players all the time, you can just look at last year's Dodgers. You know, the Astros were right where the Cubs are last year. The Astros won the World Series, and they also used the fifth fewest players in baseball. But the Dodgers last year used the sixth most. They used 52 players. During the season last year, they made liberal use of the disabled list. Some of it was for real injury. Some of it was not for real injury. But, you know, that's something that every executive is able to do. So right now, I think it's easy to notice when players are going back and forth. And obviously, there are a few important Cubs who've been banged up. But at the end of the day, right now, even with Chris Bryant out of the lineup, they're not having to dig very deep to find a replacement, whether that's David Bote or Ian Happ. And the starting rotation, even without Yu Darvish, and with a bad Tyler Chatwood, it's only really had to use six starters so far. So in a sense, the Cubs have actually been doing better than most other teams.
How much does it look to you, Jeff, that the competitiveness has something to do with that list? Because I happened to watch a lot of White Sox baseball last season, and boy, there was a whole lot of relievers used this way and that way, and competitiveness was a function there. They were happy to have some of the young kids come up like Jace Fry and throw innings out of the bullpen just because they could.
You're gonna see a lot more churn. I haven't run the numbers here. I'm going to guess that there's a pretty decent correlation between using fewer players and being a better team. Just looking at the numbers alone, the fewer players you use means you're happier with those players. They're likely to be healthier than teams who have used a lot of guys. So the Dodgers from last year are sort of exceptional in this regard. I was looking over recent champions and recent runner-ups and runners-up, and most of them have been in the lower half in terms of players used, which I think makes pretty good sense. When you're a bad team, you just have worse players. When you have worse players, they're more likely to perform as if they were very replaceable, or you're just churning through. You want to find out if you have anything in AAA. Everyone's always looking for the next Max Muncy, right? Mm-hmm. I guess apparently now in 2018, that's just a thing we can say on the radio. But generally, more churn for worse teams. I think that's a good rule of thumb.
Cubs made a move last week in designating Chris Giménez for assignment, calling up Victor Caratini from AAA, basically saying that Caratini is certainly, as an offensive player, had nothing left to prove in AAA. They want his bat available. And they said it was time to give him a start a week, or whatever they said, once every 5 days or something like that. Wilson Contreras is still a young catcher, but he's still a catcher. And catching is not easy. What are the levels of games caught in a season? I mean, outside of people named Molina or other or Carlton Fisk, how many games is too many games to, when you start stressing a catcher, especially if you're looking for postseason performance?
Yeah, it's hard to think, not just in terms of this current season, but also with Contreras' entire career. Obviously, catching is very, very challenging on the body, on the knees, on the hips, every part of your body that you need. Catching is bad for it, almost as bad as pitching. But, and Contreras right now is on pace to catch something like almost 1,200 innings, which is quite a lot. And I was looking over the past decade or so, and a few names stand out. Obviously, there's Yadier Molina, who would catch almost every game with the Cardinals. There's Salvador Perez, who would catch almost every game mm-hmm. with the Royals. Matt Wieters, when he was younger, he caught almost every game for the Orioles. You feel bad for Tony Cruz, backup catcher to the Stars, who pretty much never mm-hmm. got to play because the Starters were playing every game. So these guys are pretty exceptional. And in the case of Matt Wieters, he caught almost every game back in 2012, and he was outstanding down the stretch for the Orioles. He was as good in the second half as he was in the first. He was the same age as Contreras is right now. Now, Salvador Perez, you can look at it two ways. In 2014 and 2015, he faded badly down the stretch. Well, he was playing almost every game. And 2014, he was awful in the playoffs. But 2015, he was really good in the playoffs. And, of course, the Royals went to the World Series both years. So I don't think that there are not enough recent catchers who have had the responsibilities that Contreras has right now. Not enough recent cases to really get a strong sense of what the risk is here. But I would absolutely be in favor of sitting him at least a full sit at least once a week, because otherwise I think just intuitively you can think that's going to be way too much drain, and he needs to be rested, because I think we can all be pretty confident the Cubs are going to be in the playoff picture, and we know everyone's going to be gassed. No one's really healthy in the playoffs, kind of like hockey, but you can't just play off adrenaline alone, and Contreras needs to have those reserves.
On the other side of the battery last night, we saw Kyle Hendricks get back to being what we remember Kyle Hendricks being in a year where he was just terrific a couple years ago. The mechanics were different. He's talked a lot about where he needs to be and what he needs to get to in order to make that fastball work. Was there anything specific, anything noticeably different that Cubs fans can look for perhaps in his last start before the All-Star break coming up here?
I haven't had a chance to do a mechanical breakdown yet of what Hendricks was just able to do, but I think it's encouraging. Last year it was a little strange when so many Cubs, their velocity was down. They were probably just gassed from the long playoff run the year before, but to see Hendricks' stuff playing back up, that's obviously very encouraging. To see that Hendricks is, this year he's getting just as many swings out of the zone, he's getting just as many swings and misses, if not more. He's throwing in the zone just as often. I know we've talked before about the Contreras effect on pitch framing mm-hmm. and how Hendricks is obviously a guy who's not trying to live over the heart of the plate, not going to blow anyone away. He needs to be around the edges, and Contreras is maybe not the perfect match for him. But I think with a case like Kyle Hendricks, you can look at him. I think he has earned the benefit of the doubt in that he can self-correct. It's not just a matter of being smart enough, but he's precise enough. I think he's a professional enough about when he goes about his business. But Hendricks is capable of figuring it out, and I think that he's not in a perfect position to succeed with the catcher that he has, but his stuff is all there. His other results are mostly in line with where they've been before, just a few too many home runs, but that's not the kind of thing that I would worry about too much.
What is the latest that we know about the overall home run environment? Because we started seeing that the numbers were dropping a little bit, not as many balls flying out as often or quite as far or as fast or, I guess, as slippery as they were. Like you, as you've always explained, looking at batted ball data across the entire league mitigates the idea of small sample size. So with every week's worth of data or month's worth of data, we know more. What's the latest?
Well, I don't know what your preferred measure is here, but an easy one is home runs per fly ball. I think that makes pretty good sense, and that's been around for a while. And it's the home runs per fly ball or home runs per batted ball, whatever you want to look at. We know that players are trying to hit a few more fly balls than they ever have before, and to a certain extent, they've been successful. There's a few more air balls this year, but the rate of home runs per fly ball in the first half last season was 13.7%. That's 13.7% of all fly balls left the yard. And right now, through basically the first half of the season, it's down at 12.6%.
And I think it's a full point, huh?
Yeah, a full percentage point, which is meaningful. I mean, we're looking at a drop of, what is that, essentially 7, 8% off the rate. I know it's weird to go between percent and percentage points, but whatever. People know what I mean. And I know we talked about this, I think, roughly a month ago about it was a little early in the season, but the home run rate definitely looked down. And I think that this is pretty compelling, not conclusive, but pretty compelling evidence that something has changed again with the ball. I don't think this is a conspiracy. I don't think it's necessarily intentional, but I do think that when that commission studied the ball over the offseason, trying to figure out what happened, and they found that for one reason or another, the baseball was experiencing less drag in the air. Maybe it was something on the surface of the ball, but it definitely looks like there's a little bit of drag that has returned to the ball. And no one really loves a scientific mystery, I guess, when you're just listening to it on the radio. But the baseball, I would say, is flying a little bit less far than it did last year, which is an unusual coincidence.
I guess when you put it all together, it might not be that unusual, but I think probably still worth bringing up. Jeff, we're at that point in July where trade talk is still somewhat grounded in reality. We haven't all become unmoored to what's actually going on. So at the risk of loosing us from the dock here, the Nationals have won two and lost two since their historic comeback and team meeting the other day. And we are now beginning to have a lot of folk talk and write about the idea of the Washington Nationals trading impending free agent Bryce Harper. Is there an argument to this? Is there an argument to them making a move with one of baseball's youngest stars who has struggled some and could re-sign with Washington after the season anyway?
I think there could be. I think that the Nationals don't need to lose more games of ground, but if the Nationals lost more games of ground, such that they drifted further from the race between now and the deadline, there would absolutely be an argument, because at that point, Harper's not going to re-sign with the Nationals, and they would have no reason to keep him. But at this point, with the Nationals still being just 5.5 back of teams who I do still think are somewhat vulnerable, and in the Phillies and Braves, to say nothing of the wild card hunt, the Nationals are starting to get healthy. Daniel Murphy is back, and Adam Eaton is back, and Steven Strasburg will be back before too long. I look at the Nationals, I think that where they are right now, they're still easily within striking distance, and it would be an unsellable move to trade Bryce Harper. But, you know, if they had another stretch where they went 5-15 or whatever it was they did over the past several weeks, and they lost another like 8 games of ground in the standings, well, then of course, then you make a move. But right now, to trade a superstar is already so difficult for any team, even a team like the Orioles, where you see they're having trouble trading Manny Machado. It's a tough pill to swallow, but if you were anywhere near the hunt and you give up, I mean, there's telling your fans you're going into a rebuild, and then there's trading one of the most visibly compelling baseball players on the planet, and I don't think the Nationals right now are close to a position where they would do that.
All right, before we let you go, what is the right thing for the Cubs to do about Tyler Chatwood?
Yeah.
They can't keep doing this, whatever they're doing. It's not fair to everybody else.
Yeah, I think, not only with the Darvish news, I don't know what the future is going to hold for you, Darvish, this season, but with Chatwood being what he is, obviously the stuff is good, right? We've all seen he still throws hard, the ball still moves. Chatwood has an interesting repertoire, and it doesn't mean you have to pull the plug on him as a starter for the remainder of his contract, but I think what the Cubs need more than anything else right now is you trade for a starting pitcher. It's weird to think about the Cubs needing a starting pitcher given with just the name value in their rotation and everything they've spent on it. But I think what you do is you trade for a starter. Maybe that's Jay Happ. Maybe you aim higher. Maybe you go get Nathan Eovaldi, who I really like right now with the Rays. But then you can move Chatwood into the bullpen, kind of give him a soft start, but maybe tell him that we're going to want to try you in multi-inning stints to see if your stuff plays up. And maybe you can narrow down your repertoire and just see if Chatwood can turn into a really interesting reliever, not unlike Wade Davis, not to say that his ceiling would be that high. But you tell him, look, this is something we want to do in the second half. We're in the race. I mean, look at your own numbers. I think you would understand. We'll give you a shot to start next spring if that's what you want, but we want to try in the bullpen. And I think this whole time, ever since they signed Chatwood to that contract, there was a pretty good chance he was going to end up as a reliever. I think there were enough red flags around him as a starter. So given where they are in the standings right now, given how vulnerable they are, I would not hesitate to move Chatwood into the bullpen for now.
Yeah, when you say he'd be an interesting reliever, that's sort of interesting in the Chinese proverb sense. Hey, I like my relievers uninteresting, if that's how you're describing him. I don't know. I don't know that you could do that and just bring him in and cross your fingers in the middle of a game and hope that he can throw the ball over the plate.
I mean, I would not put Chatwood immediately in a high leverage role. And the Cubs are blessed. I mean, you've got Morrow, you've got Edwards, you've got Cishek, you got other guys you can throw out there at the end of the game. You give Chatwood, you know, a few weeks lower leverage appearances, just kind of let him get a feel for it. But again, not to go right back to the best possible case, but you look at Wade Davis's numbers as a starter and then as a reliever, and he was jerked back and forth a few years in a row, but just a dreadful starting pitcher. You'd look at him and you would never think, well, this guy could become one of the best closers in baseball immediately. And he took to it overnight. So the shift from starting to relieving can, I don't know whether it's a psychological thing or a physical thing, but it can make a far bigger difference than you'd think that it could for someone who just can't throw strikes.
Huh. Jeff, appreciate it as always, man.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you next week.
That is Jeff Sullivan of FanGraphs, brought to you by Walgreens. Walgreens is here for all your diabetes needs. Stop by today to consult with your pharmacist and get trusted advice and tips about your diabetes medications and testing supplies.
I'm trying to think back to Wade Davis's starts. And he's right. It wasn't as wild. It wasn't as crazy as other places. But the idea that you could just move Wade Davis into the bullpen was kind of no one had expected that kind of top end. I mean, really, nobody was looking at it from that perspective. That trade was for Wade Davis to be a back end of the rotation type guy. And when he was put into the bullpen, Royals fans and those who wrote about the team themselves were like, "Well, this trade was just not worth it. You're just not getting enough out of that player, out of Will Myers."
That's a pretty high outlier of a comp, though. I'm not even ready to.
He's right in that relief work can make a lot of stuff play up, but when control is that big an issue, it's a historic level of issue for him. You know what? 8.9 walks per nine?
I'm not there yet.
It's a gigantic level.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. We are your Score Midday Show, 9 to 1, Monday through Friday. When we come back, I have to confess, something I did not know, or something I guess I did not appreciate about Javier Baez.
Oh, I thought you'd watched Very Cavallari last night and wanted to make your amends.
You are in charge of that.
Yeah, it's...
I don't get it. I don't get... someone's going to have to explain that to me at some point about what the allure is.
I went home, yes. I missed transition yesterday.
Any of it.
I wasn't feeling that great. So I'm sitting there at the house just kind of like trying to reconstitute myself and getting there slowly. And I thought of the words like that you said that was my job. Like you had tasked me with Very Cavallari.
You're in charge.
I really started to rethink some things. That could be a much tougher task than I thought it would be yesterday.
Okay, I am. Something is just not connecting. Why anybody would be interested in watching any of it?
Okay. Well, you could watch it once and try.
It is a novel concept. I would never get that time back in my life. I would never. We've got a finite.
Have you ever listened to any show you've done?
It's gone.
Finite amount of time on this planet, and it would just be gone. And I just there's no interest in being a part of the lives of any of those people. It's just not. There's not a single aspect of it.
I enjoyed Jay thoroughly while watching the show. I did have to lie to myself many times.
Okay.
While watching it, and while Jay wasn't on television, telling myself I was enjoying this hour.
The thing is, some of it is his face. Like, seeing it is the facial expression to go along with the snarky quotes. The facial expressions are fantastic.
Okay, but we know he's boring and unintelligent.
Right.
And
it's something about the joy that he finds in being completely ambivalent that's just amazing.
I know what it is. You don't enjoy people. Is that part of the problem?
But he's not.
He doesn't either. Jay doesn't either. Jay hates
people.
That's
part of what makes him great, though.
I guess I don't understand that. I don't get it. And I have something that you did not know, perhaps, about Javier Baez.
Okay.
Next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Here. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.